are listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, Canes fans? It is the Forza Podcast. It is Monday, April 12th. We are back after a little bit of a break. I know this offseason we're a little sporadic in our recording times, but we are here. We got the second spring scrimmage in the books. Spring game is on Saturday. As always, I'm joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, what are we saying? How are we feeling?
I'm loving what I'm seeing out of spring. Like, I'm trying not to get too hyped up about, you know, this season, just for the reasons that we all know.
Yeah.
You know, but it's all good stuff so far, man.
Yeah, how's life going?
It's good. It's been very busy. You know, I had to take a step back from the radio show I was doing there on Slam Radio with Derek Coe and Ryan Pittman, which you should all check out, by the way, Fridays at 11. But yeah, I had to take a step back from that. You know, life was getting crazy, trying to adjust to being married now. It's only been like 4 months. And, you know, I still feel busy as ever. So, I don't know.
I feel that. Yeah, I haven't been talking as much Canes recently, but trying to get back into it. And, Dude, it's crazy. Like, I think about, like, when we first started this podcast, even before when I was, you know, doing – I'm still doing State of the U, but it's hard to talk Canes every single day.
It is.
I mean, there's only so much going on.
For sure. And, you know, I've kind of hit it like a roadblock and talking about it on a daily basis. If you look at my timeline, it's like 90% Jazz, you know, or NBA.
Yeah.
And it's just because, like, I'm so busy that I'm kind of living Jazz game to Jazz game right now, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like I'm working 10 to 12 hours a day. I get home, hang out with my wife for a little bit, and then I turn on the Jazz game, and that's like, you know, that's how my brain just turns off for the day. So That's kind of all I've been thinking about, but, you know, I'm excited for the Canes stuff to ramp up a little bit. You got spring game, and then, you know, fall practices can't come soon enough, and just excited, man.
Yeah, we got spring game on Saturday, and... it's at 11 Eastern on the ACC network, that damn channel that I guess I'm going to have to get another free week on Hulu. I hate it so much. And the thing that sucks is that's 9 a.m. because I'm back in Utah for a little bit. You're here. That's an early morning on a Saturday.
Yeah, I'll be in New Mexico that Saturday morning, but I'll have to pull it up on my phone.
Yeah. Okay, so – and then after that, the dead period for the NCAA – ends on June 1st, so I'm sure you guys have seen on social media tons of recruits planning out their official visits to Miami, which is great to see. We will get into that a little bit with our guests, but kind of just going over the second spring scrimmage, here's some stats. Tyler Van Dyke was probably the star. He is the star. 13 of 17 for 190 yards and 3 touchdowns. Jake Garcia, 18 for 27, 164 yards, touchdowns, and a pick. The boy Charleston Rambo, 7 catches, 107 yards, and a touchdown. Did you see him pictures on Friday with the visor? The dude looks nice.
Yeah, I am so pumped about him, man. Like, we might have two really good receivers this year.
I hope so, because I've seen, like, the highlights that Rambo did at Oklahoma, and the dude was really, really good. We haven't had a dynamic receiver like that since maybe Amon Richards, but I mean, and the thing is, the question with the receivers, there's a lot of questions, but is Rambo going to return to that like 2019 level? Can Mike Harley put it together for an entire year? And then like, who's the third receiver? Cause D Wiggins had, he got 5 passes for 63 yards and 2 touchdowns at the scrimmage on Saturday. We know Xavier Restrepo has been doing good. Haven't heard as much about Keyshawn Smith like in the last few weeks. So that's kind of
It'll be interesting to see who jumps out as number 3. I would be very pumped for Wiggins if he can make that, you know, solidify that spot. But we got burned by him so bad last year that like I I will never go on record predicting a good season for him ever again. However, I hope it happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just don't know, like, who the third guy is. I also don't know who the starting running back is going to be, because this is another thing that we're going to talk about with our guest. Rhett Lashley came out and said that he wants one running back to take a majority of the loads, or a majority of the carries. And last year we saw Cam Harris, Jalen Knight, and Don Chaney kind of get like the mixture of the three, but now Lashley wants one guy to be the guy. So
I bet you $1,000 that because of senior favoritism, that Cam Harris is the starter on day one.
Yeah, I know everyone is saying Chaney is the best running back, and that might be true.
Yeah.
But I really just don't see another running back being the starter, at least week one.
Yeah, I would guess that by the end of the season, Don Chaney is getting the lion's share of carries. But that would just be so uncharacteristic of a Manny Diaz football team to not have a guy like Cam Harris be getting, you know, the starter touches right out of the gate. That's how Manny does it. That's how, you know, there's nothing, we've seen nothing else from Manny's tenure to believe that that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because Cam Harris, like, he actually put together a pretty decent season last year. I mean, I think most of it was built upon the first two or three games, and then he kind of, I don't know what happened. I think he was injured a little bit, but like, he almost ended up with 700 rushing yards, which, I mean, given the last few years at Miami, that's a really good year for a running back. But it's a shame. And then, so last week, Manny Diaz, was it Manny? Yeah, it was Manny that was talking about Zach McLeod and his transition to defensive end. He said that he's doing really good, and it reminds him of Trent Harris because he switched positions. And I tweeted that out, and it got me excited because, I mean, Trent Harris, I mean, he had like 9 sacks that year, and he was really good. And then, you know, Canes fans are just angry because, you know, they just think it's Manny playing seniority. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know, man. I have a hard time. Like, I don't know. We've learned that Manny does the seniority thing, so I'm not really going to argue against that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But the thing is, like, people are saying that, you know, we have all these, like, not true freshmen, but, like, second-year guys that are so much better than Zach McLeod. And I do think that there's a lot of talent in the defensive end room, but how could you say that those guys are already better than Zach would be? I mean, Zach was pretty good, in my opinion, during the bowl game at defensive end. A lot of people were talking smack. I'm like, if you go back and watch the tapes, he looks more natural at defensive end than at linebacker.
For sure. And I guess let me backpedal a little bit because, you know, I'm frustrated with the whole seniority thing. But I've long been a supporter of Zach at D end. You know, I predicted him as one of my starters there. And actually, you know, I loved what he did in the bowl game. I mean, clearly it was very rough, right? He over pursued on a number of plays, but, he looked like a machine coming off the edge. Like he was flying off the edge, in the bowl game. And that was with only one day in practice and he was down 20 pounds. So while I think he would probably start no matter what, my feeling is that he's going to very much deserve it and might be one of the better players on defense this year.
I do too, man, because like if there's one position that has excelled on Manny, like on defense since Manny Diaz got here in 2016, it's been defensive end.
Yeah. And
like ever since he's stepped in, I can't name a season where we had a underperforming defensive end.
Yeah. Well, and remember we were talking to Holsom a little bit ago, our last episode. And he was saying that Zach was originally recruited as a 3-4, like, edge-rushing linebacker under Al Golden. And then when we switched to the 4-3 under Manny Diaz, that Zach kind of got pushed into being, what was it, like, weak side linebacker or something?
Yeah, I
don't know that stuff as well as Holsom. But, yeah, that we've been playing him out of position. And that, you know, his natural thing is kind of a stand-up edge rushing 3-4 linebacker.
Yeah. Yes. So, I'm excited to see it. I think there's more seniority problems at wide receiver personally. I'm more confident in Zach McLeod at defensive end than I am Pope or Wiggins at receiver.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, it 100% makes sense. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. Because Pope and Wiggins have not really showed anything in college. Whereas I feel like even just watching the bowl game, I mean, you can't deny that Zach was beating tackles off the edge. His problem was that he was over-pursuing, right? So he was playing the position wrong. But granted, he had been playing it for 2 days at that point. So, you know, if with a good coach like Jess Simpson, it certainly looked like he had the physical ability to play the position. So I am much more open to Zach starting at defensive end than I am to a guy like Pope or Wiggins starting at wide receiver.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, other things from the second scrimmage. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke.
He's incredible.
I am so excited about this guy. And I know that we've all been really excited about him for a long time. And people like to think that because I'm such a Garcia guy that I forgot about Tyler Van Dyke. That couldn't be farther from the truth. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, no, it's we just need patience, you know, like and it's my personality that I'm already thinking about Jake down the line. I'm thinking, man, I hope Jake has the long view of his career. And he's willing to be patient for 2 seasons, maybe 3, you know, because TBD, well, I guess, yeah, he'll probably need to be patient on the bench for 3 seasons if he's going to start at University of Miami. Because I bet TBD sits out most of this year behind Derek King. Hopefully he gets to play against, like, what is it, the Community College of Connecticut or whatever. And
what's funny is that's where Toast went.
That's pretty hilarious. Central Connecticut State.
It's so funny. And it's so great that that's our – we got Michigan State, App State, then Central Connecticut State.
Yeah. Dude, Tyler Van Dyke should start that game.
It's against his team from his home state. So
yeah. He should start that game, and he should throw 50 passes. And then Jake Garcia should also get 20 in there as well.
Mm-hmm. We should score 85 points, take no prisoners.
Yeah, at least.
Okay, are we ready? Should we get our guest on?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hello.
Chris, what's going on, brother?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Pretty good. And Bill is here, too. What's up, Bill?
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good.
Hey, guys.
Boys from Kane's Legacy on tonight. It's been a minute. Good to hear from you guys. You guys ready to get into some Kane's football? How you guys been?
Doing well. Excited.
How are you guys handling the off season? You guys, still living and breathing Canes, or have you been, foot off the gas a little bit so far?
I don't think there's such a thing as taking your foot off the gas when you find ways to get excited about Canes football. So, yeah. I've been watching like the old games from the '80s. Like every other day, I try to go back and watch some random game just to be like, oh yeah, I remember like those three guys. So.
Yep.
It's unnecessary but fun.
You know, were you guys around for those olden times? Like, I don't want to say those olden times, but the '80s. Like, did you watch those teams?
No, I was in the '80s alive for 3 years, and Bill even less than that. But like my first like actual memories of watching the team were like late '90s. So I just try to get back into that time just to be like more comfortable and knowledgeable about the history, just so like I have some basis to like compare things to. But I wish I was, because it seemed like a fun time to be a fan.
Yeah, I mean, me and Jordan kind of got screwed because we started watching Canes football like in the early 2000s, so we missed everything. It's devastating.
I was born in '88, so I only got to see really probation and then the awesome 2000 team.
Yeah. Yeah, like I think of the 2017 team as like gods. They're gods in my mind.
Yeah, they're the best team that I've ever watched like every game of. So,
which is so sad.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's get into some spring practice, then we'll hit some recruiting. Okay, second spring scrimmage is in the books. We got the spring game on Saturday. I want to ask you guys, Chris, I'll ask you first, and then Bill, and then Jordan, who is the one guy who has impressed you most this spring, offense or defense? What do you think?
I think from getting all the reports and hearing all the different insights from people, I think it's Bubba Bolden. And I know he had like a stellar year last year, but you know, even as the year went on, like there were some inconsistencies in his game that started to shine out a little bit more than you would think. And I think a lot of it was the hype early on as the team was having some success. And as things started to fall off, teams were able to figure out ways of getting through our defense and expose some of his limitations. But, you know, part of that was coming off of an injury. Part of that was probably mental with, you know, adjusting to the defense and maybe not getting to do some of the things that he would like to do. But based upon what I'm hearing this offseason, like everything has been positive for Bubba. Everything has been, you know, shining a light on just how good he is and like the immense potential, like all American level potential he has. And really also as a leader in that secondary with a now like very veteran group, I feel like he could really shine. And if you get Avante next to him, like I know Gervin Hall's there and Amari was moved. So if you get Avante next to him where he can have a guy with him that is equal level elite talent, I think you could see Bubba have an even better year, like literally all American style year from that spot.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think with T-Rob being there, it's really going to help him and just get a little bit more polished in his game. Hopefully he can be more consistent this year. Bill, what do you think?
I'm going to go with my boy TVD. And the reason for that is it's really hard to, you know, get stats from scrimmages that you can't see and kind of translate it. You hear, you know, wide receiver maybe catching four touchdowns, but, you know, was that against walk-ons, what have you. But I think the one stat that actually does translate is completion percentage. And Van Dyke has been pretty consistent through two scrimmages, and we'll see what happens on Saturday. But the fact that it looks like he's, you know, willing to take what the defense gives him, dumping it off, he's not, you know, gunning it downfield to try and make a big play, tells me he's playing within the offense. And while that may not pay off this year, I think, you know, we're looking at our future when D.R. King moves on.
Okay. Yeah, I think, I mean, in my opinion, TVD has been the most impressive. Like sitting in the media sessions and hearing what the players and coaches have to say about him. He's not flashy, and I love it. Like I love how like grounded he is and humble he is. But Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm gonna echo Bill and I'm gonna say TBD, but I want to cut it from a little bit different a direction. I mean, you touched on this a little bit at the end of your take, Bill, but so my perspective in team building and program building is very much like growing up. I always wanted to be the general manager of an NBA team, right? So that kind of shapes how I view, you know, a team and a program, and that, you know, I take the long view. And this offseason, I've been very worried about the 2022 season. I feel like we got a very talented, like, I guess, experienced squad set up for this season. We should make a move. I'm kind of worried about what comes after that. And man, everything we're seeing from Tyler Van Dyke right now is going to be an incredible cushion for us to land on after all this experience leaves. You know, we don't know. I mean, Zach McLeod's going to be gone. De'Eriq King's going to be gone. Will Mallory will probably be gone. Some of the guys from the line will probably be gone. Bubba Bolden will be gone. You know, we're going to lose so many of these incredibly important pieces that having a guy that you can rely on in Tyler Van Dyke, even in his first year, is going to be huge for the program. And I'm talking like the next 5 to 10 years, Tyler Van Dyke could really be a buoy for us by being good in 2022.
You know, I'm just really, really excited about the QB room because Jake Garcia is also playing well. Jordan and I were talking about this before you guys came on. I mean, since TVD is technically a true freshman because last year didn't really count, do you guys see Jake staying until he gets his shot, whether it's 2 or 3 years down the road?
If it's a battle of he and TVD and TVD emerges as like number one, the first challenge is going to be this year to see who gets the real backup spot. I mean, I would expect it to be TVD, but I feel like Garcia would know if TVD got it because of experience or TVD got it because he's the better player. And then once the next spring comes through, then that'll be pretty much the writing on the wall. So I would honestly expect if TBD wins it, like, by a margin, and, like, he's clearly going to be the guy, at that point, Garcia might move on. But, you know, that's – it's just kind of the way that the game is now, you know. He would love to move as quickly as possible, especially with the Ja'Cory Brown coming in and probably having Peyton be, like, a solid backup option at that point. But, I mean, I understand it. If he does, I would love to see him stay and compete and do another year and then maybe transfer after that. And when at that point he might be close to even graduating, so, like, skipping, you know, not having to sit at all. But, you know, it's hard to predict. And if they do make the changes where there is no sitting necessary at all, then it's almost like, why wouldn't you go somewhere else where you have a chance to start earlier so that you may eventually make it to the league earlier too?
Yeah, it's tough. Highly rated quarterbacks generally don't stay and sit for years. It does happen, but I think it's far and few between as we go. But you know, him being, you know, a California kid, I think it would be very easy if he knows that he's not going to start for a couple of years to, you know, head back, you know, land at a UCLA or, you know, one of those out west.
Oregon. I could totally see Jake getting a spot at Oregon if he wanted it in a year or two.
I could see him playing at like ASU.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like a cool school. Speaking of Zach McLeod, okay, so last week Manny Diaz spoke very highly about him playing at defensive end, even compared him to, you know, Trent Harris's transition, says he kind of looks like him. Bill, what are your thoughts on McLeod playing at defensive end? And do you think that, you know, do you think he'll start, first of all, and then do you think that he can be productive at that position?
I don't see him starting because I'm not sure if he could hold up against the run, and that's been a big emphasis. If you've listened to Jess Simpson talk since he's arrived, the one thing that he wasn't good at, which made him a bad linebacker, was the instincts and, you know, the reading and reacting. When you're at defensive end, that takes it away. You can kind of just go, and I think that's going to be his role as, you know, that, you know, a third down type pass rusher, second and long. So I think he can make an impact. He gets a lot of heat, but this move could potentially be really good for him. And if it's really good for him, it could be good for the defense. I just don't see him being, you know, an every down defensive end, and succeeding in that role. But I think there is a niche that he can work out at.
Okay. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, same thing. Like, there's a niche there. I like the idea of having a guy who is like a 50 or 60 year player at this point, who has been around the block and has done a lot of things and has just been in the weight room for as long as he has. Because the alternative to having him as your third rusher or your third defensive end edge guy is to have a Chance Williams, who is very, very talented and will eventually probably be a great player for us. But, you know, he's just 2 years removed from high school, and he came in as a guy who needed a lot of time to get physically ready. So to have a Zach McLeod who can go in there and play snaps and just kind of get after it off the edge, who is physical, is obviously a strong player. I'm very happy to have him there. Like, people said, oh, man, why didn't he just leave? He's going to ruin the defensive end room. No, he's not, because he's not going to start over the super, super talented guys we have starting. But he could definitely be an asset to the program at that spot.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what you guys have, like, your opinions on DeAndre Johnson. Do you, like, what do you project from him? Do you think he's going to be a starter for us?
Yeah, he's stellar. He's a very good player. He was playing, like, somewhat, like, in a weird kind of outside linebacker role, but with how Tennessee was really running him, it felt like they didn't know exactly what to do with that outside linebacker spot, whether they wanted to be more of a coverage player or a rush player. So I think that inconsistency hurt his development, which is why he was anxious to get out of there when he could. But when I went back and watched some of his games at Tennessee, when they really let him, like, turn loose and get after it, he looked like a prototypical, like, left end, a guy you'd want who can play contain, who can get up the field and rush the passer. A great complementary piece for a guy like Jafari Harvey, who should be, like, the perfect right end for us to really just kind of purely get after the quarterback.
Yeah, his game is attacking. That's what we want out of our D-line. So it's kind of a, you know, good marriage there. I don't expect him to, you know, beat Jalen Phillips or even Quincy Roche. But I think if he could be pretty, like, maybe a notch below Roche, if he does that, then, you know, I think that it ends up being a great move, or a great addition for us.
Okay.
I know his stats weren't stellar at Tennessee, but I think he's going to be a really solid D end. And I'm a lot of people are worried about the D line because we lose Phillips, we lose Roche, you know, Rousseau's not here anymore. But it's the fact that Jess Simpson is there, and I just look at what he did with our line in 2018, and it was stellar. Do you guys, Chris, do you have that same confidence in Jess Simpson and our D-line?
I have more confidence in Jess Simpson than I do any other position coach on the team. He knows exactly what he wants from his defensive line. He finds guys that have these certain physical traits. He puts them in a position to do well, and those guys, like, immediately respond. And, like, you look at – everyone talks about Gerald Willis, who went from a guy who was obviously super talented, but a guy who had, like, a lot of hiccups in his career up to that point and turned him into not just a good player, but, like, an absolutely phenomenal, like, great player for us. So that means a lot. He didn't just, like, tap into a little bit of Gerald Willis. He made Gerald Willis the best version of himself. But it wasn't just him. It was also Pat Bethel. Like, yeah. Pat Bethel was a guy who played through his career and was okay. You know, a lot of people, like, were wishing that he wouldn't start or get him off the field. He's average. He's this or that. But he became a very good starter for us. And I don't have any thought in my head that he wouldn't be able to do something similar with super talented guys like Harrison Hunt and Nesta. But even a John Ford, who people are talking about having, like, a really strong camp so far, like, John Ford is much, much better than Pat Bethel, like, in terms of physical ability. So if John Ford can be a two notches above Pat Bethel and you get Nesta, like, at his best self and Harrison Hunt continuing to improve, that defensive tackle room is phenomenal. And then you add in the Elijah Roberts and the Leonard Taylors and all those dudes that are young and progressing. Like, I love what the defensive tackles are going to be. And then you give me just consistent play from the edge guys, and I think we'll do well. Because that's how we won. Like, talk about 2017 team. That's how we won in 2017. That's how we won the games that we did in 2018.
Yeah, you know, just to add on to Simpson in 2018, it wasn't just Willis and Bethel, but look at what he did with a second-year guy like John Garvin. Yeah. I mean, that dude was unstoppable that season. So the 247 released something today. And Jordan, I'll ask you first, because I really want to hear your thoughts on this. They have ACC projected standings. Clemson is number one, obviously. And at number two is our Miami Hurricanes with UNC at number three. We'll go around the room. But Jordan, what are your initial thoughts? Do you buy it? And just sound off on that, because I know you probably have thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, my first instinct is it better happen, right? Because that's progression. If we finish below UNC, then I don't really see much progression happening for this program, you know, from last year to the 2021 season. So I expect it. I think Manny needs to do that if he wants to stamp out any ideas of his seat being hot. We really, really need to beat UNC this year. But I don't know, man. I'm probably going to, right now, if I had to project that game, I'd probably lean towards calling it a loss. But I certainly think two or three is the right spot for us there.
Okay. Bill, what are your thoughts? Do you think we're the second best team and we will finish as the second best team in the ACC?
I can see why we were put there with, you know, everything returning, even D'Eriq King with the ACL. But that North Carolina, that it's just a dark cloud, not to bring up Al Golden sayings, but that's just a but yeah, you know, it's, you know, 2 years, you know, lost. We got dog walk last year by them. But I think, you know, if it's gonna happen, if we're gonna get over that North Carolina hump, which is kind of crazy to think of as a Miami fan, where, you know, it's a basketball school in the ACC. If we're going to get over that hump, it's going to be this year with, you know, all of our talent and experience returning. You know, while they still have Howell coming back, they did lose, you know, a bunch of guys, especially on the perimeter at receiver, at running back. So I think if you, you know, if I had to answer today, I would say we'd probably win in a nail biter. But, you know, we'll see, because that's, you know, almost the midway point through the season, I believe, is that game. You know, there's a lot of football left to be played.
Yeah. I mean, that game, I don't want to look too much into it, because, I mean, you know, it's only April, right? But that, yeah. I'd feel better about that game if it wasn't off a 16-day break. Like, that is a long-ass time to be off from football. And I know Manny you know, beat his bye week blues last year, but still, that's going to be, you know, probably a top 25 matchup in North Carolina Saturday night, per, you know, probably. So I don't know. Chris, what do you think that Miami lives up to the hype and finally backs it up this year?
Well, I honestly think we're a better team than North Carolina. And I know it's hard to say with what happened last year, but everyone's like, got to get over that North Carolina hump. And it's not really, it shouldn't really be a hump for us. I don't think it's a hump for us. I think we're better than they are physically. I think that if we play up to our potential, we're a better team, which is like ridiculous to say on the heels of what they did to us last year. But I just honestly, what I feel, I do believe that we will win that game. I believe with what we have coming back, and I think with Manny's defense, it's more apt to be attacking and aggressive, where last year we were so passive and unable to make any sort of changes, that once they started to push us around a little bit, like, the defense just broke. And I don't think that Manny's defense will break in the same way that Baker's defense broke last year, because I don't think we have a coaching staff on the defensive side this year that would let us break like that. So knowing that, I do think that we'll probably screw up another game and we'll end up with a loss in there somewhere in the coastal that we shouldn't. But I think beating North Carolina will put us in a very good position, and we'll probably still end up as the team that goes, if all my like thoughts like kind of fall into place. But I think it is a game that Jordan said, the progression. It is a game that you have to win this year, because if you lose 2 years in a row, and with the way we lost the first year with the last second, and we should have really beat them, and then they blasted us last year. If you lose a third time to them, then there's no talking to be had. They're just a better program, and we can't have that.
Yeah. Well, I want to dig into this a little bit, if you guys will. I'm so intrigued by the idea. I guess intrigued is not the right word, because I don't want it to happen. I'm very curious, like, if the scenario plays out that we do get beat by Mack Brown and Sam Howell a third time in a row, what does that do for the state of our program and for Manny Diaz's, I guess, you know, his job here at the University of Miami? How do you guys think that impacts it? If, like, let's say UNC beats us and we finish third, or I guess second in the coastal, we don't get the championship berth. We're back in the Russell Athletic Bowl or something like that, or maybe even the Cheez-It Bowl again. What do you guys think happens if that's what plays out?
Take it, you're not a fan of the Cheez-It Bowl.
No, I'm not.
I think it, you know, it depends on the rest of the season. If we go 10-2 with losses to Bama, North Carolina, yeah, it's. I think it would be a disappointing 10-2 that we'd be 10-2 and not in the ACC championship game.
Yeah,
I don't think that necessarily steps us back, but it also doesn't progress us forward. Whereas if, you know, we go 9-3 with loss to Bama, North Carolina, and then some random ACC team, then that's a step backwards, and that's when I think you know, the recruiting would start to suffer, and, you know, the seat starts to get warm. But I think if we go 10-2 with losses to Bama, obviously, and then a good North Carolina team, you know, I agree with Chris that we're the better team. But I think they're the better coach team. At least last year, that was obviously the case. We'll see what happens this year. But you know, if we go 10-2, it's kind of just, we're on stable ground. I think that's the best way to put it. We're on stable ground. We know what the bar is, where we need to be, but we didn't actually take two steps back like we've done anytime we've had success in the last, you know, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. And on that note, I think the recruiting part is the big question. Like if we go 10-2 and the recruiting falls off, then it would, you know, it's not a disaster, but it's obviously a big hit to what we were building and the confidence that everyone would have. If we go 10-2 and then the recruiting is still phenomenal next year, and we still bring in a couple big fish that are obviously like on the board and potentially alive for 2022's class. And I think it just kind of kicks the can that another year down the road, but at some point you'll run out of space to kick that can. So we got to get over the hump sooner than later.
Agreed. And sorry, Marsh, you go ahead, but I have some dad. Okay. Well, so as I was saying a little earlier, you know, like there's going to be, I know our roster is loaded with young guys that project to be very, very talented. The experience is what worries me in 2022. My concern here is that, you know, we're going to go 10-2. We're not going to progress. You know, we're going to lose to Bama and UNC. We're not going to make a big splash this year. And then, I mean, what happens if we have a 4-loss season the following year? You know, with all that talent we're losing, that's when the recruiting will start to look worrisome, in my opinion. You know, because, like, say you win the Orange Bowl this year, you know, you you get the championship, the ACC championship berth, you know, whatever happens there doesn't matter. Then you go to the Orange Bowl, you have a nice showing, maybe even win. And then if you take a little bit of a step back, then you're like, well, it's okay, because now we got these five-star guys that got a bunch of snaps last year. You know, they're in the starting lineup. Like, we just had a retooling year, right? We didn't have to rebuild. We retooled. Like, just optics, it's much easier to sell it if you make a splash this year. I really think we have to make a splash on the national scene.
Well, sorry for cutting you off. I agree with you guys fully. I think if you don't beat UNC, you still at least have to win 9 or 10 games in the regular season, which is completely doable. I know NC State is going to be, you know, talented. I know Pitt is always tough, especially on the road. But my biggest thing is, even if you lose those two games, you can't let that snowball into what's happened in years past, where you lose one game and then, you know, you lose another, and then the season's completely, you know, ruined. Manny cannot afford to regress. I mean, I know people say last year that obviously it didn't end well. Some people say that the season wasn't a success, but in my opinion, you know, it might have been baby steps, but, you know, we beat the teams that we were supposed to beat, which in years past we didn't. And now the next part is just winning a big time game. Like, you have to win at UNC. You have to win. If you can't beat at UNC, you better win the bowl game. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can't. We have one bowl win in like 75 years. So I can't go. If you're going to lose to the Tar Heels again, you better win the bowl game, and you still at least better get nine or 10 wins. But I have a question for you guys about the defense. Jordan and I have talked about this a little bit, but one of the biggest guys that is getting so much hype this spring, Corey Flagg, looks like he is going to be the middle linebacker. Chris, I'll start with you, then Bill, then Jordan. Do you guys buy the hype? Are you guys buying into the Corey Flagg hype?
Well, I think Corey Flagg, no matter how much success he had last year, I think he will always kind of be what he was when he came in, which is an instinctual, natural middle linebacker, a guy who is not a phenomenal athlete, who can get to the ball quickly because he's smart enough to understand where the ball is going, and will always use his instincts to make up for any sort of athletic limitations he might have, which is fine, which is great to have as a middle linebacker. I don't expect him to be like an all-American candidate that going in this year. Do I think he could be like a, you know, honorable mention all ACC, rack up a bunch of tackles and be the first like linebacker to lead us in tackles and maybe as long as the bowl streak? I do think he could be that. But I think his best value is being smart, being a guy in the middle that can kind of like be the ringleader at the second level, pretty much what young Shaq was for us, who, again, another guy, not a dynamic athlete, but a smart player, always found himself in a good position. If he could be that for us and we can surround him on the second level with like premier athletes, I think he's a guy that'll eventually be, you know, for the most part, a 4-year starter for us. That'll be very consistent. That will always be very happy to have, but we'll never see quite the overall flashy plays that like a great middle linebacker would have made. We'll see it more like a Colin McCarthy or a Darryl Sharpton, which is fine, because if we can have that for 4 years, then I'm very happy. I'm very happy with that spot.
I'm not necessarily buying into the hype. I'm buying into the hype in terms of, even if he goes out there and is an average linebacker, that's a considerable improvement from what we've seen. So I agree with Chris. He's not going to be John Vilma or, you know, those level guys, and that's okay. But if he can be just that steadying force, not be a liability where, you know, every team that we play goes into the game saying, well, we could take advantage of the linebackers. And they did it pretty successfully. But if he could be that guy, just the, you know, the leader of the defense, you know, a solid tackler, you know, playing in the box, I think, you know, he's going to be a starter for a long time. And then I guess we could probably even, you know, talk about, should that be the case at Miami? Because our linebacker recruiting has been, you know, pretty non-existent. And I think we're going to talk about recruiting later, so we can get into that. But we'll see what he does physically. I think his athletic limitations are pretty well documented since, you know, he was committed to us at a North Shore in Texas. But Yeah, you don't necessarily have to be the athletic freak to be a successful linebacker. You can make up that extra, that slower step, by being able to read and diagnose keys. And if that's what he's good at, then I think he'll have a pretty good season, and then he can build on that going into his. Actually, he's still a true freshman because of the eligibility, so he could technically start for 4 more years. So, we've seen a lot of Corey Flagg, going through 2024.
Yeah, I still feel the same way that I have this whole offseason, and it's very similar to what Bill and Chris are saying, in that, I think he will be, by a pretty considerable margin, our best linebacker this season. I don't think that means he's going to be a world beater. I agree with what Chris said, and that, I'm expecting, maybe some honorable mention votes. Maybe even getting an honorable mention for the All-ACC. I think it's the year after this one that he'll really come into his own and be a very high-level linebacker for us, at least in terms of on-field production in college. But I don't really see anybody else that's going to contend with him for best linebacker on the team. So I buy the hype in that sense, and that he will be our best linebacker this fall. But I don't, I don't think he's going to be. I don't think he's going to be in the first round of any mock drafts after this season.
Yeah, I agree. I think people need to. I'm very excited about Corey Flagg, and a lot of people have been talking, him up, and I think that he has a really bright future. I do think we need to settle our expectations for him this year. I mean, because this is going to be his first, year if he is the starter as a starter. But I do think that, I think it's okay for him to stumble, throughout the season. This is really his second season. And so he's going to have, mishaps and mistakes. But if we have him and, from the looks of it, Avery Huff on the other side of the linebacker or a healthy Sam Brooks, I already think that's a better linebacking core than we had last year. So I'm excited and still got to, tempt the expectations, but there's just so much young talent on this team. And it's good to see that at least one of them is primed for a starting role.
Yeah. Well, so my last question for you guys regarding spring, I guess when it comes to the offseason camps, spring camp is in full swing and going to wrap up shortly, and then, into fall camp. What is it that you guys would like to see before the season starts? If there's anything that'll help you sleep a little better, help you feel a little more confident going into week one of the season.
I personally would like to know what the offensive line is looking like and, exactly what the two deep would be and what they're looking at for certain positions. Because there's certain spots there where I feel like if certain names come out on top, and I have to, have to trust in the coaching staff and all that kind of fun stuff that you always say. But there's certain names that I feel like if they're starting, that we are not in the best position to succeed. And if they are at least pushed or even give me this guy or that guy, if you give me that, at least give me the confidence going into the rest of the summer that, it might be this other guy taking over a role. I'd be much happier. Specifically those two spots being right tackle, where, I've seen a lot of Scaife in there, which concerns me. I know it's better as a fit at right tackle, but I still think Jared Williams was a better player there than he was, especially after the confidence that Scaife had last year. And then, of course, at center, where everyone, pencils Gaynor in. But give me a Gaynor or Ja'Kai Clark, just so I know that, Gaynor is being pushed, because while he's been solid for us, I don't think we have our best caliber offensive line out there if Corey Gaynor is playing. And that's no offense to Gaynor. Seems like a nice kid, leader type, wears the C, does all that kind of good stuff. You throw him out at the banquets and all that. But I can't imagine our best offensive line has a Corey Gaynor in it. And then on the other side of the ball, same thing with the linebacker and the safety positions. Let me know who's stepping up. Just tell me that a guy like Keontre Smith is really shining at weak side linebacker, because he has all the skills to do it. Just let me know that there's some optimism there at those spots, and I'd be very happy.
I was going to go offensive line, but for a different reason. If you think back 2 years ago with the Dan Enos offense, our starting offensive line wasn't decided until the week of the Florida game. If you hear my son crying, I apologize. He's just upset about his Dan Enos offense as I am.
We don't say his name on this podcast.
we'll just call him Pinos. and then last year, COVID offseason, new offensive line coach. The starting offensive line really probably wasn't decided until very late in fall camp as well. So I think it would be, you know, very important to, you know, if we know who our five guys are, let's, you know, kind of quit the mixing and matching. At this point, we should know who these guys are and what they're good at, you know, where they fit in best, and let them gel for, you know, complete camp. And, you know, because, you know, Bama's going to roll into us and, you know, they're not going to hold anything back. So, you know, if I think for me, I would sleep a lot better knowing that, okay, it's, you know, opening fall camp, maybe a week or two in. These are our five guys. These are the starters, and it's time to go.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's probably – it's the wide receivers, just because we know what we have in Mike Harley and Charleston Rambo, because, I mean, he looks like he's getting – you know, he's having a really good spring. But my question is just who the third guy is going to be. And I know that Manny and Lashley have said they're going to rotate, you know, six receivers, you know, in and out. But I think the majority of the receptions are going to go to those top three guys. And so I've heard a lot about Keyshawn Smith, but his, you know, camp has kind of been quiet in the last week or so. Haven't really seen anything of him on the scrimmage notes, things like that. Xavier Restrepo's had a really strong spring. You know, could he be that third guy, or are we just going to, you know, kind of bow out? Not saying bow out, but is Pope going to be that third option? Is D. Wiggins going to be that third option? So I like stress about the wide receivers just because I'm a huge fan of Rob Likens, and I don't want his, I just like him being around the, you know, the program. And so I think a young guy really needs to step up this year because we've seen, you know, what we have in Pope and Wiggins. So the three receivers is what's keeping me up at night. But let's get into some recruiting before we let you guys go. So the NCAA announced June 1st is the end of dead period. Thank the Lord. And as you guys have seen, there is a ton of high recruits coming in. The main weekend is June 11th through the 13th. You got Jacoby Spells, you got Jaden Gibson, Caden Helms, Cameron Williams, Isaiah Bond. Also, Ja'Kari Brown's going to be there that weekend. Chris, I'll start with you. If you had to make a prediction, who would you say is our next commit?
If we get all the way out to the 11th, I feel like Isaiah Bond is a guy that, you know, I think he's coming. I think I feel very strong about it, not because like I've talked to Isaiah Bond, but because, you know, just from, we had him on the show with Ja'Kari and like they had a really good rapport there. I know that they're friends and like they know each other well. I feel like Bond's game fits really well with Ja'Kari Brown's. I would love to see it be him. But also another name that I would like to see being a relatively soon commit would be Jacoby Spells, just to get a local kid like locked away, that and a local kid that everybody respects and everybody knows is being like a real legit player. To get a guy like that on the heels of like a Ja'Kari Brown, that way you have a big out-of-state guy and a big in-state guy to position at two positions of significant need. I feel like that would be a really good pickup for us.
And Jacoby Spells, the big dogs really haven't come calling yet. I think we're, you know, battling like Syracuse and West Virginia type schools. So that would be a disappointing battle if we lost it to, you know, one of them. But I'm going to go with Nigel Lee Kelly. He's actually committed to Florida State, which I don't see him sticking there. But, you know, South Florida kid, Jess Simpson, you know, has his reputation of developing defensive ends. He can sell his NFL experience, especially. I think he just kind of fits what we want. And, you know, it seems like the staff has him, you know, pretty high on our defensive end board. I know there's, you know, some, you know, five-star level type guys like Shamar Stewart and Marvin Jones Jr. But I think he's the best realistic shot at getting, you know, a high level defensive end.
Okay, so we all know that the defensive end class in 2022, especially down in South Florida, is absolutely stacked. You know, you guys, you got guys like Shamar Stewart, Kenyatta Jackson, Marvin Jones Jr. I don't think we're getting any of those guys. But how many defensive ends and really defensive linemen, because you also got Daniel Lyons, the DT from Homestead, who I am a huge fan of. How many defensive linemen do you think we need to take this class? And who, like, realistically, who could you see us getting?
I think the number's probably like four, probably in the four. I get two inside, two outside guys. I know that that end class is crazy, but like you said, it's, I think some of the names are just names that are up there, and like, and we know, they know, everybody knows, like, we're not really going to get them, even other South Florida players. Those are kind of like ticketed already to leave, go ACC, Bama and all that. But again, it's not the end of the world. Cause I feel like there are guys that are kind of like under the radar. Like, I mean, not that Nigel Kelly is under the radar because he's already committed to Florida State and all, but I don't think people really understand how good he is. Like Billy was saying, like, he could eat, if you said he was a number one ranked defensive end in the state, I would not be surprised from watching his tape and seeing what kind of athlete he is. I would say, yeah, that makes sense. Cause he has size, he has physical ability. He has all those crazy tools. And then David Franklin said the other day that he could easily be like a Leonard Taylor type player and have that kind of jump. Now, that's big praise considering like what Leonard Taylor is. But, you know, I see that kind of potential in his game to make a really huge jump this next season. So I'd be very happy with him, like a Dante Anderson outside. Yes. And like you said, Daniel Lyons is a stud. He's a beast. I want him maybe behind Kelly of all the defensive linemen in the state. I would be thrilled to get him because he seems like a guy that is absolutely tailor-made for everything that Jess Simpson likes to do.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of Daniel Lyons because, I mean, I've talked to Gabby Ruccia from 247 a lot, and he is – I mean, he went and saw Lyons in person a few times, I think. He just has so much to say about him. I really think Miami has a good shot at flipping Kelly and then – get Lyons, but I want the Homestead duo. I want him and Dante. I'm a really big fan of Dante Anderson. It's really just that fourth guy. It doesn't look, I feel like Miami, I don't think we're going to get Kenyatta Jackson, but that's okay because I completely agree with you. There's a lot of guys that have flown under the radar because of how stacked this defensive line class is. Bill, when you look at, I know we were talking about recruiting linebackers and how we have not done well, very poorly actually, and just recruiting the numbers and really the size of these guys. I know Wesley Bissainth is probably the number one target at linebacker. Do you see Miami getting him? Because in my mind, he is one of the best linebackers in the country, and getting a guy like that from Miami Central would be huge. What are your thoughts on him?
Man, I hope we can land him. I've absolutely hated our linebacker recruiting pretty much since Manny took over, with the exception of Shaq and Pickney, even though that was kind of in that transition class. But I really don't like taking those high school pass rushers and then standing them up. Linebacker is such an instinctive position. If they never really played a true linebacker spot, asking them to do it at, you know, a P5 level when they're not necessarily the freak athletes, I think it's just, you know, setting them up for failure, and it's setting the defense up for failure as well. We've had some bad luck with injuries, with Steed, Wilder, but then you recruit low-level athlete guys like, Bradley Jennings. You miss on Zach McLeod with the instincts. So really, you know, Tyreek Austin Cave played linebacker in high school. We have some guys coming in that did as well, but you know, we haven't landed a stud linebacker in a long time. We have a guy at Miami Central right down the street from the school. You know, we have all these, you know, high powered recruiters on staff. I think it would be really disappointing not to land him.
Okay. So, and Jordan, I'll ask your thoughts on this too. Speaking of, you know, lack of numbers and things, I know that Manny has talked about going out and getting, another guy or two or three maybe, from the transfer portal. And it seems that linebacker is probably the biggest position of need just to have another guy in there, an experienced player. Do you guys think we need to get more guys from the portal before the start of the season? And are there any names that you guys have heard that Miami could go after?
I don't know if you need to. I mean, I would love to get one. It's not as desperate as other, like getting a cornerback, like getting Rekin. That was desperate, I feel like, just to make sure that everyone knows, like, you're really pushing that position to be something significant. And getting Rambo, that was a need that had to happen. I feel like if we were to get a linebacker, it would probably be like To'o from Tennessee. Like that would be the best possible scenario. He's waited so long to make his decision now. I'm very surprised. And like that to me reads like he's waiting to see if like a spot opens up where somebody leaves, you know. And it's strange, but like it's because he's waited just so long, like through the start of spring camp, a lot of places. That would be the only name I could really think of as a legitimate option. I feel like they're happy with where they are at linebacker, and them making some moves recently, putting Amari to striker and moving Keontre to the weak side, and potentially even shuffling some other guys around. We've heard a lot about Steed so far this spring, so I wouldn't anticipate anybody coming in. Now, at the same time, if some circumstance out there changes and someone sees that there's greener pastures after their own particular spring practice, it'd be great, but I don't know if it's a need per se, and I don't know if the team views it as one.
There's really isn't anyone out there at linebacker that would really be worth it at this point. But, you know, if someone enters the portal, you know, they may be a big name, but if they're entering the portal this late in the game, that means they're probably not seeing the field at their current school. So how much of an impact would they really make here? And then, you know, that another point to consider is, you know, that's another 2022 class spot that we would have to sacrifice. And we already sacrificed one spot for Cody Brown, the running back. So I think we're good with where we're at. They just need to, you know, just have one or two guys just step up at those critical positions. And then, you know, we have depth. We have guys that can, you know, come in. They played. But I don't see us finding a high level type transfer that's going to help us this season.
Okay. Jordan, what do you think we need to go to the transfer portal?
You know, the spot about, you know, dipping into the 2022 scholarships is a great point. That's been a worry of mine because Manny's kind of been doing that. We're getting in a cycle of borrowing from the future, you know, too much. And so I guess I wouldn't hate it if we found help at linebacker. Bill and Chris brought up a lot of good points in that, you know, there's probably not anyone that's going to be a big game changer for us. So I don't know, like if we did land like a To'o, I'd be cool with that, but you know, I don't know. I'm not super pleased with the linebacker core, but I'm willing to roll into the season with how it is.
Okay. So my last question for you guys, and then we'll send you guys off. You guys have been great, by the way. I'm going to list five recruits. And Chris and Billy, just give me you think they're coming or no. So the first one, Chris, Kamari Wilson.
No, I don't think so. I think if he were coming, he would have maybe pulled the trigger already. I think the longer it goes, the less likely it is.
Bill?
No, I think George has kind of sunk their teeth in, and we all know what that means.
Damn it. Kamari Rogers.
I think so. I think he's coming. I think he's a good fit for what we do defensively. I think that he's a guy that T-Rob would have a nice impact on, and I think that he could be a real, like, consistent, like, starter for us once he gets in. I like his potential.
Okay. I'm going to say no as much as I want to get him. I just – until I see it, getting a high-level corner from SEC country, I'm going to kind of err on the side of caution on that one.
Okay. All right. That I know Mississippi State is Mississippi State or Ole Miss is going hard at him, but Ole Miss. Earl Little Jr.
No shot. 0%. I would love to get him, but like honestly, and for him, like if I were Earl Little Sr., I would be like, man, go to Alabama. Like they just put guys in the league that do exactly what you do. Like he's gonna go there and be Minka Fitzpatrick version 2. So yeah, go to Bama for sure.
Yeah, let me pop in on this one. I'd be less surprised if Earl Little Sr. suited up for us again.
Get that extra year back.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so bad. Bill, are you the same answer?
Yeah, I think the only chance we have is if Bama, LSU, Georgia, and Florida, whoever, they all kind of pass on him for whatever reason, which I don't see happening. But yeah, I'm firmly in the no category.
Yeah, I think we all are, which is very sad. Okay, two more. Wesley Bissainth.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh. And only because we have to, because anything less than getting him would be like a catastrophic failure. It would be
okay. So just to interject real quick, would you call him our number one 2022 target right now?
I think he has to be. I think he has to be. Like Billy outlined it for you guys, like how long it's been since you got a high level linebacker, since you got a kid from South Florida State. It's like Spence. It's Sean Spence, and that was 14 years ago. So I mean, that's absurd. That's like almost as long as Wes has been alive. So we have to get him. 100%. It's a must.
I'm going to say, yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, I have no faith in Packy as a recruiter, but I think, you know, with T-Rob and TVD, I think we can land him. I think we have a lot to sell, and it just makes too much sense for it not to happen. But again, you know, our linebacker recruiting doesn't give us much optimism, but we're due. So I'm going to say yeah.
Uh-huh. Jordan, you want to go 3 for 3 on the yes?
You know, I've yet to dig in too much to this recruiting class, but I'm going to send the good vibes out there and I'm going to say yes.
There you go.
Yeah. This is the kind, like we've said, this is the kind of kid that you have to get. And he's just a stud. I'm a huge fan of him, and I think he can be a real good starter for Miami. Okay, last one.
Julian Fea. Isn't Florida State the main competition for him right now?
Yeah, that's what I've read, and that's what I've heard when talking to people, that Miami and FSU are really the two top dogs, which surprises me that, like, other bigs – because I know, like, Alabama's offered and everything like that, so it kind of surprises me that – it's really just Miami and Florida State. Maybe he just wants to, you know, stay home in the state of Florida. But I reading that in like March and April is very that can change real quick.
I guess the good news, if it does come down to us, there's a whole season of football left for Florida State to play. So that puts us in a really good spot.
Yeah, I don't know how they have this class that they have right now. I don't get it.
It's like us the past however many years where we're loaded and then people see the product on the field and then it just dissipates.
Yeah, it's them taking any commit they'll get to make it look good, to like get other attention. But the kids are just like they're going wherever like will accept their commit, but they're still playing the whole field. So,
like if I like the thought of having to play Travis Hunter for 3 years is not appealing to me. That kid's an animal. Okay, the last one, Julian Armella, whatever.
If this was like 2 months ago, I would have said yes, because like it seemed like all the smoke was for him going towards us. And like honestly, I figured he'd be the last one you'd say, because it's been weird where like there hasn't really been much, and he came out and said he's not going to do it official and all. I feel like everyone that I know that actually knows stuff about recruiting, like I feel like they always say, oh yeah, maybe. Which is really concerning, because I feel like 2 months ago it was, oh yeah, for sure, he's locked in. So, and he's also a Florida State legacy. Not to say he's going there, but you know that's something that's always going to be like a weight on the kids, even if it's just not to go to Miami, because we did some horrible things to his dad's teams back in the day. But I'm going to say no, and I think there's other guys that are really good that we could. There's still a lot of offensive line talent out there, like Malik Agbo is a monster. He's a stud. But if we don't get Armella, it's not a disaster. It just feels like it's leaning the other way, which is weird to me, but I think that's how it's happening.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's I'm going to say no. I think there's kind of a weird family dynamic there as well, where he's kind of being pulled in two different directions. But yeah, he's bounced around high schools a lot too. I just don't see him staying home at this point, at least.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if we do miss on him, I do have to say though, you know, I've been critical about the stable of talent that we have, but I mean, offensive line is a position where Garen Justice has totally like turned that dynamic on its head. In the offensive line room, we have so many young guys that are going to be good. Yeah. So I don't think it'll be I don't think it'll hurt us that much if we miss out on a guy like Julian Armilla.
Okay. All right. Cool. Jordan, do you have anything else for these guys?
No, I just thank you so much for coming on, guys. We always love chopping it up with you. And you know, you guys always give us some very valuable insight.
Yeah, we can't let too much time pass before you guys come on again.
Just let us know. We're always happy to do it. Thanks for having us, guys.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Cool. Good stuff. Yeah, that was great.
It was great.
That was awesome. It's just, I love getting guests where you can just ask them a question and then they just go.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree as I take a sip from a cold Mountain Dew.
Yeah, what, just a regular one?
Yeah, just a regular zero.
Okay.
But right. I've been, did you see the picture of my pantry setup that I got going right now?
No. Did you tweet that out?
Yeah, I have. I'll send the picture to you right now. I have three different.
I'm looking at it right now. Oh my hell!
I know, right? I have a problem.
I didn't know all these flavors existed.
Well, they're new, and I am loving them. Yeah, it's watermelon flavor, dude. It's so good.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay. Before we go, what game should you go to this year?
Well, let's pull up the schedule and look at some dates, man. I don't know. Which games do you think you're going to be at? I'm definitely going to make sure it's one that that we can meet up.
Absolutely. Okay, so I am – so, yeah, for those of you who don't know, I am no longer in South Florida. It sucks, but I'm still going to be around every now and again and definitely going to be at Canes games and things like that. Looking at the schedule, I'm definitely going to the FSU game in Tallahassee.
Okay.
I've been to an FSU game, but I've never been to an FSU Miami game in Tally, and it's just a fun town, and I got friends there, so it's going to be a blast. Mm-hmm. I want to try and go to hopefully two home games.
Yeah.
And looking at it right now, I would love to go to Michigan State just because it's the first home game. You know, we'll have fans back at the Rock, things like that, and then. Maybe Va Tech, dude.
I would so be down for one of those two games. Va Tech got my attention. When is Thanksgiving, though? Do we know? Let me Google when Thanksgiving is this year. I'm a married man now, so
things
like Thanksgiving I need to keep in mind.
Oh, man, it's just going to be so great to have fans there. Fans.
Thanksgiving is the week after. So we play Va Tech on the 20th of November, and then it's the 25th.
Okay. So,
yeah, that actually might be one, and that would be a fun one. But I'm good for that, man, either Michigan State or Va Tech.
Bro, NC State, they're going to be good. That could be a fun game, too.
It could be.
Yeah, it could be. I really like our home schedule this year.
Yeah.
I don't like the road schedule isn't too daunting. I actually think FSU could be a little bit more difficult than people think. I think Pittsburgh's going to be a struggle. Yeah. UNC is UNC, obviously. But, dude, if we don't win at least 9 games, I swear.
Oh, man.
Like, I can't
call it Mario Cristobal.
I'm gonna have to call it quits. I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, we will. Be back before the spring game, maybe Wednesday night. Gonna
hopefully
reach out to some guest. Yeah, hopefully. But yeah, it's always good. We always say this after every episode, but it's just good to be back on here.
For sure. It's dude, just makes my life so much better when we're doing this. So
yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, thank you to Bill and Chris from Kane's Legacy. Thank you to Jordan. And until we talk to you guys in a few days, hopefully, go Kane's.
Go Kane's.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like and leave a comment to help our podcast grow. Follow me on Twitter @HurricanesMarsh.